This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jason Patinkin, and here's what's coming up.
When you ratify a treaty, there are certain obligations, and if you don't feel that you're benefiting as a state, there might be a reluctance in terms of ratifying the treaty.
That was Edwin Igede, who's on an expert panel tasked with improving the Lomé Charter on Maritime Security and Development in Africa, which largely remains unratified 5 years after it was written. This story and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. In 2016, the African Union adopted an agreement that it said would result in continent-wide economic progress linked to Africa's oceans, seas, rivers, and lakes. But almost 5 years later, only two countries have ratified the Lomé Charter on Maritime Security and Development. Those countries are Togo, where the historic meeting took place, and its neighbor, Benin. Darren Taylor has more.
In 2017, the AU appointed Edwin Igede, Professor of International Law and International Relations at Cardiff University, to an expert panel tasked with improving the charter. The AU was concerned that although 35 members signed it, they just didn't see the point of the deal. It's a concern that remains valid, says Igede.
Maybe there's too much focus on only the oceans and the seas, and that in a way basically alienates landlocked states because
He says the Lomé Charter, although currently dead in the water, is still Africa's best hope of establishing a blue economy, defined by the World Bank as the sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods, and jobs. In the African context, says Igede, this definition is too limiting.
And I think one of the strategies personally I feel that will be helpful is if we're clearer in terms of the point that the African blue economy is not just limited to certain states that are coastal states. The African blue economy is meant to benefit all African states.
The charter aims to develop industries such as fishing, shipbuilding, and tourism on all African waterways, whether coastal or inland. Yet, says Igede, it's nowhere close to being implemented.
When we look at, for instance, the agreement establishing the African Continental Free Trade Area, that agreement was adopted in 2018. By 2019, the required ratifications to bring it into force has been obtained 1 year.
The professor believes the AU has failed to communicate the potential advantages of the Lomé Treaty. For example, states don't see how revamped ports could spark more efficient trade. Instead, most African countries appear worried that if they ratify the accord, they won't have the resources needed to live up to its conditions, such as bigger investments in certain industries.
When you ratify a treaty, there are certain obligations, and if you don't feel that you're benefiting as a state, there might be a reluctance in terms of ratifying the treaty.
It's 4 years now since Igede helped draw up annexes to the charter that highlighted its developmental aspects.
To be honest, I, as a member of the ad hoc group, I don't know how far it's progressed. And to date, we still have not been able to finalize that. And I think that's very key in terms of encouraging more ratifications.
If the treaty is ever to be fulfilled, he says it must be better organized. Communication is key, says Igede.
Things are happening out there, but we really don't have information about it. And sometimes I go for different events, and basically you see duplication of efforts. You have a feeling when you get to an event that at another event somewhere we have discussed this. So why are we discussing it again and not taking it forward?
Igede says talk is important, but only when it causes action.
And there's a need for a high-level body that can coordinate things. and basically shepherd everyone in that direction we want to go. Like, there are things we can obviously borrow from what we see out there. The European Union, for instance, has a Department of Maritime Affairs and Fisheries. And when we look at that, we see it's really important. They're able to coordinate the approach of the European Union. So we really need that in terms of the African Union.
The Lomé Charter is supposed to spark cooperation in combating piracy, illegal fishing, human and drug trafficking, and preservation of the marine environment. But most of the continent's waterways remain as uncontrolled as ever. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Nigeria has imposed new restrictions on mass gatherings and foreign visitors amid a new wave of COVID-19 cases. The Phase 4 regulations restrict mass gatherings outside the workplace and a maximum of 50 people in an enclosed area. All approved gatherings must observe physical distancing measures. The nationwide midnight curfew will continue. All international passengers must undergo a 7-day quarantine, while arrivals from India, Turkey, and Brazil must undergo institutional quarantine. The reimposed measures do not restrict intrastate travels, but citizens are encouraged to refrain from non-essential movement. Now we look at Somalia, where the United Nations warns that the country faces a perilous future as drought followed by torrential rains have destroyed this year's planting season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Somalia is one of the countries in the world most prone to the erratic and calamitous impacts of climate change. It has been hit by a double climate disaster for more than 2 weeks that is likely to worsen its already acute situation of food insecurity. The drought, which was declared on April 25th, was soon followed by torrential rains that caused flash floods and rivers to overflow. The UN Organization for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports the rains came too late for the planting season. OCHA spokesman Jens Lajerke says floods have killed at least 25 people in various parts of the country. The victims include 9 children who died when their house flooded in the Benadir region in the capital, Mogadishu.
The Juba River has burst its banks, houses have been washed away, and livestock have perished. There are also reports of flooding in the north of the country, and there are continuous flash flood warnings across Somalia, especially for people living in low-lying areas. In flooded areas, local communities are struggling to prevent further flooding by placing sandbags, poles, and other materials to reinforce riverbanks.
The World Food Program reports 2.7 million Somalis are short of food, with more than 500,000 on the brink of famine. An estimated 300,000 children under age 5 are malnourished, including 48,000 who are severely malnourished and at high risk of disease and death. OCHA's spokesman Lajerke warns the combined impact of drought and floods is likely to worsen this critical situation.
Both climate shocks cause displacement, jeopardize access to safe water, increase waterborne diseases, and impact people's livelihoods. Despite increasing humanitarian needs, the funding forecast for 2021 is the worst in 6 years. This year's Somalia Humanitarian Response Plan requires $1 billion to assist 4 million people. As of today, the plan is only 19% funded.
Lajerke says OCHA and partners are using the limited funds at their disposal to step up operations in drought-affected areas and reach at least 353,000 people with aid. Urgent efforts, he adds, also are underway to respond to the flash flooding. The World Food Program reports it has distributed food to more than 20,000 people in Jowar City, one of the areas hardest hit by flooding in central Somalia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Also with Somalia, Kenya has suspended flights to and from its northern neighbor just days after the two countries restored diplomatic ties following a 5-month break. The Kenya Civil Aviation Authority said all flights between the two countries are suspended except for medical evacuations and United Nations humanitarian flights. That's according to a Somali official who did not want to be identified. The suspension lasts until at least least August 9th. The VOA Somali service has seen the Kenya Civil Aviation Authority notice, which was issued yesterday, that confirms the flight suspension. KCAA has not yet announced the reason for the suspension, but it comes a day after Somalia reaffirmed an earlier ban on flights carrying cot from Kenya. Somali bans imports of cot, also known as miraa, which is a chewable stimulant plant grown in Kenya and popular in the Horn of Africa. Kenya's suspension of flights downgrades relations that seemed to be on the upswing. Last week, Somalia announced it was restoring diplomatic ties with Kenya. Mogadishu severed those ties in December over what it said were violations of Somalia's sovereignty and interference in its internal affairs. Kenya denied those accusations. The countries also have an ongoing maritime border dispute. Now we look at Libya. The White House has named Richard Norland, who currently serves as U.S. ambassador to Libya, as a new special envoy ahead of the country's planned elections in December. Jason Pack, a fellow at the Middle East Institute and founder of Libya Analysis in London, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi about this development.
I'm thrilled that we have a special envoy again. On the other hand, I have mixed feelings. Conflicts throughout the world frequently have special envoys because ambassadors run the embassy and they deal with the day-to-day aspect of bilateral relationships. An envoy works with the British, the French, the UNs, the Russians, the Emiratis to try to coordinate their efforts. And Libya is not just a country that America has important business and strategic interests in. It's a conflict that we need to coordinate the French, the Italians, the Greeks, the Turks, so they're all on the same page. And we can try to get a solution to the conflict. And I said mixed feelings because by appointing the current ambassador as the envoy, I believe it clouds things. On the one hand, it's good that the ambassador knows the issues. He knows the players, both internationally and inside Libya. So he has a good background to become envoy. On the other hand, it may cloud in the minds of the people he's meeting with what his role is. The envoy should have a very separate role from the ambassador. The envoy should deal with internationals to use America's convening power to get them on the same page. So I hope we have another ambassador appointed very quickly and that the ambassador and the envoy have different roles and that the envoy uses America's convening power to supercharge the UN and the Western players to having a unified policy towards Libya's conflict, to bring the elections and the constitutional issues to completion.
So how could that move boost U.S. support of Libya's recently formed unity government, which is scrambling to navigate factional tensions, restore security and basic services, and chart a path toward the planned December elections?
The Biden administration supports the GNU government of Abdelhamid Dbeibah since that government was formed. If the new special envoy, Ambassador Norland, is able to more unite the allies, the UN, the British, the European Union players, so that we can more help and present a united front with the Libyans, that would be great. I don't think that the U.S. appointing a special envoy in any way signals more or less support for the GNU government or for elections. It's not connected. And I don't even really think that it signals more U.S. involvement. What it signals is an exiting of the Trump period where we didn't have all of the correct number of institutional positions filled. These are frequently called the plum book positions. And in the Trump administration, many of them were vacant. And the special envoy to Libya was one such position that was vacant. So now it's filled, hopefully separately from this. It can be given the power to go out there into the world and try to coordinate international actors to help resolve Libya's conflict and have the elections.
The U.S. has been calling for the withdrawal of foreign troops from Libya, but Tripoli militias are rejecting any pull of Turkish military presence, and they recently attacked the new Libyan foreign minister following her appeals for Turkish withdrawal. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a complex issue. Many foreign actors have either their military directly in the case of Turkey or mercenaries in the case of Russia, Sudan, Chad, inside Libya. The October 23rd, 2020 ceasefire says all of these militias needed to be out and mercenaries needed to be out of Libya already. They're not. It's unfair to focus on one actor and say just the Turks need to leave. So it needs to be phased. As Russians are leaving, the Turks need to leave. That said, I can see an argument that the Turks need to leave at the very end of the process because Libya's sovereign government may want them to stay. And it was risky for the new foreign minister, Najla Mangush, to go to Turkey and ask for their military to leave, knowing that other aspects of her own government want them to stay. And this shows that Libya, of course, is in a place where it doesn't have a unified government, and each individual within the cabinet is going to have different connections to Turkey as opposed to Russia, as opposed to Sudan. So a phased approach needs to happen to gradually incentivize the various mercenaries and militaries to leave Libya.
Police in Cameroon say they have charged a prison convict with impersonating African presidents over the phone to defraud victims, including the government of Niger. Police in the Central African state say the suspect last year pretended to be Cameroon's President Paul Biya and conned the Nigerian embassy out of an undisclosed sum of money. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon convict Jacques Calvin Eyafa has been bound to a wheelchair at the Yaoundé maximum security prison for the past 2 years. But authorities say that hasn't stopped him from continuing to steal money from people over the phone. Judicial police officer Vincent de Paul-Meva says Eyafa is accused of using a smuggled mobile phone to impersonate officials, including Cameroon's President Paul Biya. Meva says Eyafa's skills are so good, he managed to con Niger's embassy in Cameroon last year out of an undisclosed sum of money before he was caught. Meva says in March 2020, the Office of the President of the Republic of Cameroon reported that someone was impersonating President Paul Biya and his cabinet director Vondo Ayolo. He says the imposter called Niger's then President Muhammadu Issoufou on the phone several times. He says Issoufou alerted Biya of the suspicious calls and Biya asked the police to open investigations and track the callers. Meva says the search led to the prison and Eyafa, who is serving a 3-year sentence for a fake employment agency that promised jobs for a fee. Police say Eyafa mimicked Biya's voice in calls where he vowed to rally Nigerians in Cameroon to vote for Issoufou in December's election for a prize. Niger's embassy in Yaoundé confirmed that people they believed were Biya and other state officials called them and made some inquiries but declined to go into detail. Meva says Eyafa got the embassy to give him the personal telephone number of Niger's President Issoufou. He says Eyafa is suspected of cheating or attempting to cheat several French-speaking African leaders, international aid groups, and private companies. Meva would not disclose the amount of money Eyafa allegedly received by mobile money transfer from Niger or name any other victims. Catherine Penda, who owns a road construction company called Construct Cameroon, says Eyafa duped her out of what she called a huge amount of money. She says she never for a second suspected that Eyafa was an imposter. Penda says she doesn't want to disclose the amount of money Eyafa extorted after promising to give her contracts to build roads in Cameroon. But she says Eyafa did not act alone and pleads with Cameroon's and Niger's police to track his network, which according to her is well organized. Cameroon police say they are investigating a network of imposters allegedly led by Eyafa, who impersonate and cheat high-ranking state officials and investors in Central African states. Germain Tono Ntimi, A lecturer of law at the University of Yaoundé says Iyava could get up to 40 more years in prison if found guilty. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The United States says it, quote, strongly supports democratization in Ethiopia, ends quote, as it nears a national election on June 5th. State Department spokesman Ned Price said yesterday that to hold fair elections, Ethiopia should, quote, respect the freedom of assembly, the freedom of speech, political participation, and access to internet and information, end quote. The statement comes amid a humanitarian crisis and conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has pressed for Ethiopia's and Eritrea's commitments to withdraw Eritrean troops from Tigray. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said in March that Eritrea had agreed to withdraw its forces. However, U.S. officials say there is no evidence that that has happened. Ethiopia has struggled to prepare for the elections because of difficulties in registering voters. The general elections have been delayed since August, according to the government, because of the COVID-19 pandemic. The unrest, as well as restrictions on outside observers, have led some to question the electoral process. The European Union canceled its election observer mission. Also yesterday, a bipartisan U.S. congressional statement expressed deep concern for the continued presence of Eritrean forces in Tigray. Zimbabwe's government supports a permanent monopoly for their transport company, which is called Zupco, with a subsidy to keep fares low. Since the COVID-19 lockdown last year, privately owned vehicles for commuters have been banned. But with some riders left waiting for hours, makeshift vehicles are resurfacing to try to meet demands. Reporter Kudzai's Vinavashe has more details.
Andrew Chibanda is the acting spokesperson for the Passengers Association of Zimbabwe. He welcomes the government's initiative to provide affordable transport, but with reservations.
Passengers Association of Zimbabwe thanks the government of Zimbabwe for coming up with the idea of providing subsidized transport to the public as one of its mandates. However, the introduction of Zupco is seeing the rise of monopoly. The government is pushing its monopoly agenda by denying other players in the transport sector to provide transportation services to the people in and around cities if they are not registered under the Zupco franchise.
Chibanda says commuters have been left waiting for hours just to get transport to work and back home. Although illegal, small passenger vehicles have moved in to help meet the demand. But the government says it's worried about this new trend. Monica Mutswangwa is the Minister of Information.
Cabinet notes with concern the upsurge in the use of unauthorized passenger carrying vehicles that are not affiliated to Zupco on the roads. Social distancing and other COVID-19 measures are hardly being observed by passengers in these vehicles. In order to curb this development, the Vehicle Inspectorate Department, VID, the ZRP, Zimbabwe Republic Police, and the Traffic Safety Council, they are all enhancing surveillance and enforcement.
Although Chibanda does not condone this trend, he says this and other signs are very telling of government misgivings.
This monopoly agenda does not give room for quality service provision since there is no competition for better services delivery. The government has failed to provide the transportation services as is seen on main roads where people are seen hitchhiking to and from work. And later, the government blamed the emergence of pirate cars for the spread of COVID-19 in Zimbabwe.
Chibanda adds that some Zupco vehicles fail to maintain social distancing, which also is non-existent in the long queues to get on. He also questions the roadworthiness of some Zupco buses. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our editor, Paul Alexander, thank you for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.